Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man. He's still safe, self-isolating. He's still in his pyjamas. It's Richard Herring. Hello, my fan friends. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Lobbing Serbian Tennis Players podcast. That's right. That was topical at the time of recording. Djokovic has gone back to Serbia. It fits. It almost fits. And also, lobbing is a tennis term. It's very clever. What I've done there. Though I was talking to Ian Wordle the other day, and that is practically his name, the man who invented Wordle, the hit word game on the internet. I know usually for this bit I choose things that are very out of date, but in the 10 days between me saying this and this actually being broadcast as a podcast, I think Wordle will have become a thing of the past. That is my guess. I'm enjoying it at the moment. Anyway, Ian Wordle calls it Rahulastapur, and he gets it first time every time. It's very clever. Anyway, yes, I'm still in my pyjamas. I've still got the coronavirus, COVID-19, still my one. I don't know anyone else has had that. I've not yet tested negative, but I'm allowed to leave the house on Wednesday regardless, because that's the new rules, isn't it? That's all the new rules. Because of Boris Johnson, we're allowed to do anything we want. It's very exciting to be doing these remotely. This one was I've decided to try doing two podcasts in a night for the first time ever when I'm very ill. I don't know why I would do that. I haven't been too bad. We were meant to be doing these at the Phoenix, but we are doing them remotely, and it will be a pleasure to do so. We are doing some gigs at the Phoenix on the 24th, which might be too late for people listening to this at home, of January, and then I'm at the Bristol Slapstick Festival at the end of January, the Leicester Comedy Festival in February, I think it's the 19th, with Joz Norris and Rebecca Wheatley, and then back at the Leicester Square Theatre at the end of February, God, if God be willing, in his heaven above, so please do listen in. It's been fun self-isolating. My son's got the COVID, my wife and daughter have not got COVID. It's incredible. And we have been mixing a little bit because we live in the same house. But my daughter, the other day, had drawn a picture of a face and stuck it up on the wall. And she insisted that the name of the face was Jeff, right? It's that Jeff was the name she chose. I don't know where she got Jeff from. We don't know anyone called Jeff. To begin with, she stuck Jeff on the wall and played a sort of slightly ineffectual game of catch with him, where you throw the ball towards Jeff. Or the wall, depending on how you look at it, and Jeff, or the wall, would knock it back to her, couldn't catch it. We then had a family disco where everyone got to choose a song. Jeff chose a Katy Perry one, like Phoebe did. They got very similar tastes. Phoebe then took Jeff off the wall and started dancing with him and then announced that Jeff was her husband. It was all happening so fast. I wasn't sure I approved of my daughter. I'll put a picture of him up for you people at home. Shall I? There he is. That's Jeff. If you're watching this live, you'll be able to see him. I wasn't sure I approved of my daughter marrying Jeff. I knew so little about him. And to be honest, he's got a bit of a smirk on his face that I don't like. But you can't stand in the way of love. And I guess I just have to accept that my daughter is married to a piece of paper and hope that works out for these two kids. I'm presuming Jeff is a kid. If I find out he's 25, then I don't care about what happens to me. I don't care about prison. I will rip that pervert to shreds. As long as Jeff is 6 or 7, then I suppose it's all right for them to get married. But I mean, what 6 or 7-year-old's called Jeff? I'm very worried about it. We've been in COVID lockdown for all this week, and already Phoebe's gone a bit Tom Hanks in Castaway. But who can I blame for that? Or probably myself. All my friends are made out of papier-mâché. Yeah, it's your fault, Richard. It's Ali Sloper from Twitch of Fun. He's just turned up. It's cross-promotion. Yes, it's your fault, Richard. All your friends are made out of tater, aren't they? Papier-mâché or out of the resin. Look, I've got a guest waiting. I don't want you coming in here making her think I'm mental. I think she knows you're mental. I don't think you have to worry about that. They tuck you up, your nun and dad, and the ventriloquist done this. It might be my fault, Ali. Thank you very much. That she's in love with a piece of paper. I'm being old-fashioned, I suppose. In my day, you didn't just marry a piece of paper with a drawing on it. But all that matters is my daughter is happy, and Jeff makes her happy. I wish I could trust him. You sometimes have to go with your gut. I just don't know if someone should marry the first face they draw on a piece of paper. There are so many other pictures out there. Don't tie yourself down, darling. Anyway, look, we're going to crack on because we've got lots to get in tonight. My guest tonight is probably best known for playing Jewel Thistleton in Resting. That's why we're all here tonight watching this. It's Laura Jean Marsh, ladies and gentlemen. There she is. Hello, Laura.
Hello, mate.
How are you doing?
Do
you remember being in Resting? There was a lot to choose from, Laura.
What were the others?
The problem with X-Men First Class is too good, but you were in an uncredited role in X-Men First Class.
I was lobbed in a cupboard in X-Men. Me and some other ladies all got put right in a cupboard. Yeah, but Resting was a sick sitcom that never happened.
I saw there was one episode of it on...
that was the pilot that never happened.
With Robert Lindsay.
Yes, Lindsay was in it.
Yeah.
Somebody else funny was in it. Who was it? Somebody played like a chimney sweep. Can't remember, but yeah.
Did it get... Was it non-broadcast or was it broadcast?
It was pitched and never happened. Okay. I thought you were going to...
What would you have chosen?
Well, I wouldn't have. but I thought you were going to bring up, because I just thought the obvious one would be the, if you were choosing things from my Wikipedia that I don't know who put up, was MTV walking around naked.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about that, obviously.
I was just like, oh, he's definitely going to bring that up.
I'll bring that up. Let's bring it up now. Look, people may not know who you are, Laura Jean Marsh. But you're an actor, you're a model, you're a musician. So one of your modelling jobs was walking naked through Brixton, according to Wikipedia. Is that for MTV?
That's basically what happened. I just walked through Brixton and the whole crew were hiding. So I basically just walked through Brixton naked. But I mean, I wasn't completely naked. I had like patches over my bits. Okay. But it was pretty... It was actually quite fun, weirdly. It felt like, you know, like a dream. And I definitely had one of those moments before I walked out where I was just like, I don't have to do this. But I'm going to. I'm here now. Yeah. And lots of people in shops and like out on the street selling stuff, whatever, didn't know what the fuck was going on. And I just had to walk around.
I imagine you got some comments from the men. Was it near the tube? There's a lot of men in Brixton hanging around by the tube. That's my main memory of Brixton, having got off there quite a lot of times when I lived in that area.
Well, it was weird because the other people, because it wasn't just me, there was a few other people cast in that less clothes, more music. It was what it was called. And we all chatted afterwards about the sort of reactions we got, and everyone was just terrified of us. No one was sexualising us or going anywhere near us. Everyone was like, what the fuck is going on?
What was MTV's thinking behind this, that less clothing, more music?
You
can have more music and people can still wear clothes. They don't have to
I don't know. They were doing some sort of like sexy summer nonsense. Okay. And yeah, but actually it was quite fun. I don't mind. Don't mind the nudity.
Yeah, well, that's all part of the job. Look, you're born in Somerset. Did you grow up in Somerset?
I was born in Trowbridge, sunny Trowbridge.
Right. I haven't managed capital. To find that. Is Trowbridge in Somerset, or is it in
the West Country? It's Wiltshire, yeah. So it's just outside Swindon, Chippenham, proper sort of farmer country, and a little suburban sort of village just outside Trowbridge. I grew up, I lived in my grand's house, and I had my mum and my dad and my two brothers there. And then I moved to Bath when I was three, when my parents split up.
Okay.
And that's where I went to school, and I lasted there until I was 16, and then I buggered off.
Bath's very nice, though.
Yeah, I went to a all-girls state school, which was not dissimilar to a mental asylum. it was a bit like sort of British version of Girl Interrupted. I don't know if you've seen that film. Lots of girls trying to survive being bullied and lots of, I had a great art teacher, but it wasn't the best school in the world. Sorry, Haysfield. terrible music department, and music was sort of everything to me at that point. So I didn't last long.
I suspect, knowing a little bit about you, that you're quite a rebellious student in any case.
I was quite, I guess so. On paper, maybe. I wasn't self-destructive. At that age, I was very creative. I was writing lots of music. My family are all musicians, so I just wanted to start a band.
Right.
So, and there wasn't a great music department in Haysfield. It was kind of covered in cobwebs, and you know, it wasn't great. And at that point, my oldest brother lived in London, and we're really close. Played by Nick Helm in my film.
Yeah.
I just did a runner and started a band in London when I was about sort of late teens.
So was that Screaming Ballerinas? Was that the band you started? Yes.
Yeah, that was my band.
Yeah, so straight in.
Pretty much, yeah. A little bit of finding my feet and meeting people, meeting musicians and creative sort of kids. And yeah, and then I started a band.
I was in a film that you wrote and directed called Giddy Stratospheres, which is about the sort of noughties and the music scene in the noughties. So was this when you got there? Did you arrive in the middle of that sort of era, or were you there a bit earlier and then this film sort of set a bit later than that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of fell in love with a bunch of bands that were really inspiring me. And I went to a couple of music festivals when I was sort of 15. And for the day, I went to Glastonbury for the day, and I went to Reading Festival for the day. And at that point, I was feeling quite bored with my life as a teenager in this school. So I sort of remember feeling just like, oh, this is what I need to be doing. I need to be around music and people making lots of noise. So I convinced my mum and my dad that I'd be all right if I moved to London. and bless, my brother was here, and he's 11 years older than me. So he was sort of, there was a lot of responsibility, I think, put on him just to check in with me. But I think I was persuasive and I was all right. You know, I did start the band, and we didn't do very well here, but we had a bit of a following in Italy. So we went and did lots of tours over in Italy. And, you know, I was rebellious, but I also think I achieved quite a lot, even within that small sort of, that small time I was in the band. I think we did all right. It was fun.
Mm. Well, I think you're someone who gets things done. That's certainly what I know about you. I'm not surprised that you'd be the kind of person who, at 16, would be that sort of sure of themselves and want to go out into the world and do stuff. I mean, you were kind of on the scene a lot by the looks of things. The few bits I've found about you from that time is you kind of, I think this is on your website, but you, Time Out called you everyone's favourite poser, and you were sort of a party at all the parties.
Yeah, well, we right? So I had a club night called Dolly Rockers, which we used to have five bands at that time. There was so many amazing sort of unsigned and unknown bands. So we'd have five bands on, and I DJ with my friend Eloise, and it was a really exciting time for music, but it was also super messy and incestuous and a little bit dangerous for a lot of us, because we were all, you know, kind of on our own. A lot of us were on our own with our families in other towns, so
yeah,
all hell broke loose often. But yeah, I put on these club nights and I DJ at other people's club nights and stuff like that. Yeah. But that was the same, at the same time I was doing my own music as well.
Sure. And so you started doing acting as well. Was that sort of simultaneous, or was that a bit after the
Yeah, I think I was sort of banging my head against the wall trying to get a record deal. And although we did have this sort of minimal success in Europe, people didn't really want to sign female-fronted indie bands in London and in the UK. It was very cock heavy. I was only 19 and I was kind of in charge of this band, and I wrote all the songs, and it's quite young to be in charge of something like that. And we kept getting turned down, and it wasn't an easy time to be a chick in a band. So I just sort of gave up, really, I think, if I'm honest. And at that point, I started getting cast and stuff. I did a few sort of sketch shows. Like, I had tiny roles in Peep Show and Uncle, where I met our Nick.
So you're a pregnant crack addict in Uncle.
I was a pregnant crack addict in Uncle. And that was, you know, I just sort of, just from being cast and stuff and loving being on set and enjoying comedy and doing bits and pieces like that, I just found myself getting cast and stuff more often, got myself an agent, and I fell in love with being on set and started writing my own stuff. And that kind of leads us so I've skipped quite a lot.
Well, the film's very interesting, because one of the films is, well, you should talk about it, because it's sort of based, you know, because it is based, I don't know how autobiographical, there's obviously quite a lot of autobiography in there, but it's sort of, it's interesting to me. We'll talk about the film as well, but what was the fact that you got this off the ground, and it sort of happened very quickly, didn't it? And sort of almost from nowhere. Was it during the lockdown that you sort of had the idea? Is that right?
Well, it's funny. I think the last time you and I chatted on Zoom, we were discussing which glasses we should get you. And my wonderful costume designer, Aaron, who I don't know if you remember Aaron.
I do. Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. And he was my friend. And he's, you know, my best mate, and I've known him since I was like 18. So he was actually one of the guys, one of those posers, you know. So we've known each other forever. So he was kind of one of the first people that I, when I wrote the script, I had on board. And luckily, he's an amazing costume designer and an artist and stuff. So, but yeah, I wrote the script, and when we first went into lockdown, I had a bit of a kind of smack in the face. Nobody actually smacked me in the face, but I was running through a park and listening to old sort of bangers music stuff that really inspired me, and one song in particular came on that sort of triggered lots of memories from the time, which was Giddy Stratospheres by the Long Blondes, and they were an amazing band at the time, and lots of memories came back to me, and we lost lots of friends back then through sort of various different horrendous circumstances, and I also kind of, you know, there was just stuff that I hadn't really dealt with, and that it all came back to me. And I just started writing this script, and I'd made a few short films, and I'd written a few other ideas. Me and a couple of mates were going to make a different film during that time, which I now have kind of shelved. I wrote Giddy Stratospheres, and it was, pretty autobiographical, I'd say. I mean, I changed a few names and changed myself and from a musician to an artist, like a painter, and like bits and pieces were different, but it's pretty, obviously there's comedy in there, which is why we got, you know, you in. But it was, the original script was a little bit darker, and then I tweaked it. And yeah, I mean, before I knew it, I had sort of just, I'd managed to get a few people to invest in the film that were really into the period of time and really loved the script. And then, you know, before I know it, I was chatting to you, chatting to Nick, casting roles.
Yeah,
Aaron to sort out the wardrobe, finding locations, and I thought originally it would just be this little thing I'd put on YouTube, and now it's going to be, you know, it's been released in the UK and America, and it's going to be going all around the world by the end of the year.
I mean, it's sort of an incredible, you know, story of what can be achieved, if you put your mind to it, and if you know, and it's not, I mean, it's, in film terms, it was, it's not a big budget film. It's a very small budget film. If you can get together a few thousand pounds, and find, and you obviously work with a lot of your friends within it as well, but that's a nice thing to do. But was it, had you ever directed anything? Were you directing music videos at that point, or was this the first thing you directed?
Yeah, so I directed a couple of shorts that I'd written as well. Being musical, directing music videos, I was absolutely loving doing that, and I still love doing that. But no, I definitely hadn't directed a feature film, and I definitely hadn't directed one that I had written and I was going to star in.
Yeah.
So originally I was going to cast someone as me, and then I just thought, fuck it, this is happening now, I might as well fucking do it. And obviously the ages of us all just made no sense, which I know that you've pointed out before.
Well, I was playing yours, and which I don't mind playing your father, but I was playing Nick Helm's father, and he's 13 years younger than me, and I think looks worse than I do as well. So I'm, I was a little unfit, and we aged me up a bit to play. I was playing you. I was playing your dad, which I didn't research in a great detail, but I don't know how close these characters in the film were to the real people. But there was definitely some strong influence in there, I would say.
Well, I mean, there's quite a few characters in the film that are pretty close to the bone. I mean, there was one moment where I was in the church filming that day with you, and I mean, that was a really stressful day for us, just as a crew, and also just me in general, because after you guys left, I had to do that. I have to be careful with spoilers for anyone that hasn't seen it. But that, I had quite an emotional moment in the film, and we'd already had such a fucking massive day, and it was just so, and we didn't have Beth there that day, who was the producer, because she had to deal with something. And Aaron, the costume designer, Aaron just came up to me and he went, You're burning some bridges here, mate. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
And I just looked at him and was like, it's too late now. Everyone's seen the film. We're all still talking.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think my family are really proud of me. I've made this thing that is very much from my heart. I actually watched it this morning for the first time since the premiere, which, because I just couldn't. I couldn't watch it for ages just because it's so close. I was exhausted by the end of watching it because I felt like I'd just gone through it all again. But I am really proud of everybody. Josh, who plays Jasper, Beth, who plays Bella, they were the producer and the first AD on the film. Everyone, the crew, everyone, the cast, it was such a great group. So,
It was all being filmed. It wasn't during a lockdown, was it? It was between. Did you manage to film the whole thing between the lockdowns? Basically, was that how you managed to do
it? Yeah, we did. My cat's attacking. Come and say that's hello to your granddad. we filmed during lockdowns, and then we filmed a little bit after Christmas as well. So it was tough because we had to make sure everyone was safe, but not one person tested positive, if you can imagine that, with all that massive crew.
Well, it was a fair sized crew, but also you were doing these scenes obviously that I was not involved in the bacchanalia and the drugs and the dancing, but you're doing all these scenes within a club where everyone's off their faces, and you had a very small amount of people for that, really, but it does look like a it's very hard, I think, in films to make anything like any kind of disco or dance place or anything look real. They always look they always look fake. Yeah, with a very small number of people, you do sort of get this real feel, I think, of...
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing that I was, looking back on it, that there are a few gaps in the crowds that I definitely would have liked to have filled in. But actually, weirdly, those club nights that we used to put on, they weren't like... they were more niche, it was like a niche little culty kind of they weren't massive successful bands, so it wasn't always full. So I do think we just about got away with it for those scenes, but for my next projects, I'm sort of gunning for huge Glastonbury crowds, and I'm going to get them. So, you know, I'm really excited at the prospect of being able to pull off like a massive crowd watching, you know, some epic bands and some of my other things. So
sure. Well, that's what's kind of exciting about it. I suppose that by, you know, it's a calling card as well. I mean, it's a great thing in itself, but to be able to put together a film on your own that kind of quickly and that well, and then, you know, that's a calling card to get other work and to get more finance and be able to do bigger things. And it's sort of, I find that fascinating that's now more possible, I guess, because costs have come down, I suppose, in terms of making film, because equipment is available. And if you're, you know, I suppose something like the Blair Witch Project sort of did a very low, what looked like a low budget film. It probably wasn't that low budget once they did the publicity.
I think the Blair Witch Project actually, I think it was about $1 million.
Right.
And actually, technically, I mean, we went to BIFA recently because we were longlisted at BIFA for Giddy. And there was, you know, the other films we were up against were all like millions, but they were supposed to be indie films. And it's like, we don't stand a fucking chance. but I think Blair Witch Project was $1 million. Yeah, right. Which is still low, you know.
It's still loads, but it's sort of possible. And I've been working with Jamie Adams and we're doing something else together. And, you know, the budgets for that are sort of, it's still a, you know, a significant amount of money, but it's within the reach of someone with a little bit of investment or some, you know, funding coming from somewhere. And, you know, I think that's it. If you just get off your ass and do it, then it can lead, and it doesn't have to be a movie even, you know, it can be just a short film or just a sketch or something, but it's sort of interesting that it leads on to these other things and that you're then, you know, you're talking about doing higher budget films and big crowd scenes. So it's very exciting the way that goes. And so were you anticipating that it would, did you just do it and thought, what, let's see what happens with it? Or did you know it was going to have a limited release, or did you, what when you were filming it, did you know what was going to happen with it?
Well, I think part of me, I don't know, it all spiraled out of control very quickly. you know, just from contacting the bands from our soundtrack, because we've got a really great soundtrack from that time, and just people saying yes and people reading the script and really liking it. I mean, Bulldog, our UK distribution company, were on board just from my script. You know, they hadn't seen the film. So, you know, I realized quite soon after I, you know, started sending it out that it was something that people were interested in. And I think that kind of side of me, from being a kid in a band that never really succeeded as a musician, just kept thinking, well, I guess I'm going to have to really go for this. I didn't think that. I really enjoyed writing it and I wanted to make it. But I don't think I thought it would get this far. I certainly didn't think it would be released everywhere all over the world and it would get good reviews and people would, you know, it's had a nice resurgence since, it's gone to Amazon Prime here, and I've had so much love from people about it, and it's really nice.
Yeah,
it's really
I just think it's for people who are creative out there or in any field. I mean, you know, you've obviously done this in music. You've just said I'm going to do it and see what happens, and you've done it in film. I'm going to do it and see what happens, and you know, you can. You know, it's not, you haven't got, I mean, if I'm almost the most famous person in it, you haven't got very good, you haven't got very big star names in it. So you haven't even, you know, you don't need to, you know, to create something. A, you can get in contact with people and you'd be surprised at who does things, I think. But also you can do something like this with a group of people, you know, are good and who'll do a good job. And I think that for a first thing, it's almost better that there's not recognisable people in it, I suppose.
I think that I'm not really, because I'm a bit of an indie kid, it wasn't like, for me, I wrote the script and the first person that I thought of to play Murray was you. And the first person I thought of to play Tom, or Tim, as we call him in a film, was Nick. And so it wasn't like, oh, who can I get? It's like, it was like, I've got to get Richard. So, you know, and you absolutely smashed it. You were so brilliant and charismatic and funny. So,
well,
you know,
nice.
Well, that's true.
But, you know, it's sort of fun. I mean, I hardly ever get asked to do it. Nearly all the acting I've done is stuff I've written myself. So I hardly ever get asked to do anything. So, and you know, like it was like whatever, November in 2020.
Yeah,
and so it was, you know, there wasn't a lot going on in any case. So, you know,
I think
people will, you know, but I would have done it. I would have done it I was doing, to be honest, is, you know, as long as I wasn't out of the country or something. But it's which doesn't seem likely. But I think by asking people, and you got, I think you contacted me via Instagram, and I'd only
slid into your DMs like a snake.
But both the films I got offered in lockdown, I got more acting work in lockdown than I've ever had in my life. Both of the film, you know, two films, and both were offered to me via Instagram, which I think I'd only just set
it's
up
amazing.
As well.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's such a bloody good tip for anybody trying to do stuff, because I mean, I'm writing an article on Shane Meadows at the moment for a magazine, because he's one of my biggest influences, and I just thought it would be fun to interview people about him. And sorry about my cat, can you hear that? So I've just been messaging people on Instagram going, like, you know, these actors and people that work with them and people that I really respect, just going, do you want to talk about Shane Meadows? And they're like, yeah, sure, when you're free. But if you go through agents and stuff, you just don't get, you know, it's better to be, I think I'm a one-on-one kind of person. So,
Be a bit cheeky, just find, I mean, that's what I do with this podcast as well, is that it's easier to get guests via Twitter or wherever than it is to go through agents. So I very rarely go through agents. I mean, some of them, some people I know, but a lot of people I've gotten this guesting with who wouldn't know. And, you know, people are amenable to do stuff. So that's interesting. And it's, you know, if you put something together and give it a go, the worst thing that can happen is, it's no good and no one wants to see it. And when you're acting in something as well, you'd show me some of the script, but I hadn't seen the whole script, or at least I hadn't written the whole script, read the whole script. You don't know as an actor whether something's going to be good or not. I've been for auditions with, there was a film called Manila Envelopes that actually got to the point where it was made. I don't think it was ever released. It had quite a good cast in it. And I got this audition, and it was a very weird audition in someone's house. And then there was this whole weird experience of playing an interview. It was before I was doing interviews, but I was basically playing Tony Wilson. But the cameraman thought I was, he was from Spain, and he thought I was Tony Wilson. And he was saying what a big fan of mine he was, and I was a bit confused.
Why would you be auditioning to play yourself?
And it was when we were filming it. But then I don't know what that was, right? And I don't know whether it would have been any good when it came, if it was put together. I never saw it, but it was probably a bigger crew and more money spent on it than Giddy Stratospheres. And so you never know when you get a script, when you've seen it, how it's going to turn out. So I think both. Nick sort of saw it before I did, and he said, it's really good.
I love that you and two are sneaking around messing each other.
Because you've got to think, you know,
it could be shit. This could be terrible. We don't know
what the rest of it's going to be.
No, I know. So, well, actually, Nick told me that he was sneaking. Like, he came to the rap party, which you couldn't make, and he told me that he messaged you to say it's not shit.
Don't worry, it's not shit.
I totally get that. Yeah.
But, you know, it's really nice for me to have the chance to. And I wouldn't have put myself in that part necessarily as the first choice. But it was nice to have a go at something like that, and it was really good fun to do it. So good. People in the UK can watch it on Amazon Prime. It's available to rent elsewhere if you haven't Amazon
Prime.
Yeah,
it's on Sky Cinema, and it's on iTunes, and it's on stuff that I didn't know existed, like Microsoft TV and Google Play and things like that. But yeah, it's now free on Amazon Prime if you've got that membership thing. So you can see our movie and see you in action.
See me acting.
Well, in my next six of the series I'm pitching at the moment, which people seem to be interested in, is called Stutter. And it's set in the 90s in a sort of alternate Britpop universe. And there are elements of the occult, and there are kind of pagan dinner ladies in Camden. Sounds bizarre. But if you're interested, I'll send you the script, because I want you to play a coked up band manager.
Good. That sounds like the kind of part I use. That sounds more like the recurring parts.
He's great fun, and he's manages the band Stutter, who are all found dead in a circle in a strange ritual. And So
no, I heard a little bit about this. Yeah, it sounds great. It's sort of interesting. It's sort of not so bad. The 1990s being a sort of nostalgia thing. Did you find it weird that 2007 is like considered? It feels like a slight nostalgic look back. That's definitely slightly terrifying, isn't it?
Well, people, because I get approached a lot by music podcasts that want to talk to me about why I wanted to make a film about this era, and I didn't. You know, I wrote a film about a couple of incidents in my life that happened. it happened then. But I seem to have become this person that's made the first film from that scene, which is cool, you know, but that wasn't, you know, the plan. But yeah, definitely weird when people are like, you know, it's already become like this Britpop thing, you know, but it doesn't seem like that long ago to me, but I guess I'm getting older now.
Well, it starts to go very fast, or and
we were talking about pissing earlier, weren't we?
Yeah, we were talking about piss, how much you need to piss in the night. And you already need to piss more in the night than I do, and that's saying something.
Did you hear me piss earlier when I didn't turn my mic?
I didn't hear you piss. This was before broadcast. I advised the guest to have a wee, and I had one too. But Laura still had her headphones in. So
I did.
She could hear us, but we couldn't.
I tried to piss really quietly.
It's an important skill for a director.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you think you're going to be more of a... Are you going to carry on acting, or are you going to move more into the directing role, do you think, now? Or is it hand in hand always?
Well, I mean, I'm still acting. You know, I still go to auditions and get parts. You know, I've got a film that I'm in called He Takes the Lead, which is premiering at Manchester Film Festival in March. It's actually premiering in Manchester, and it's directed by a guy called Thomas Manchester. sounds like I'm making it up, but it's true, which is really brilliant, and I'm really proud of that. And I'm in that acting. So I still really love acting. It's just the best, you know, that I fell in love with it, you know, straight away, and it's something I love doing. But I like making stuff. I like coming up with stuff and making stuff, and I really love directing. So I'm going to try and do everything as per usual. Yeah.
Are you going to be in Stutter? Have you got a part for yourself in Stutter?
No, I haven't. But right. I think that it would be fun to, I don't know, pop up as like a cab office woman or something, or like a dinner lady or something. I don't know. I might pop myself in there somewhere. But it's very much like I've got ideas for pretty much everyone. So I'm quite looking forward to just being behind camera for that one. I'm really excited about it.
No, it's great. So that's a TV series or a sort of...
TV series. Yeah. I've already written the whole thing. I'm sure it will get twisted and turned in different ways, but people seem to be really into it. It's absolutely bananas. But there's going to be a great soundtrack, and, you know, it's definitely... I'm hoping it's sort of showing that era and that kind of amazing music and, you know, in the best light possible, and it's going to be really fun. But I just wanted to kind of bring in these elements of the occult for some reason.
Yeah, well, why not? I think that sounds good. And the soundtrack of Giddy Stratospheres is one of the big things in it as well. You must have spent a lot of time putting that together.
Well, actually, because I was in a band during that time, I knew most of the band. So I met, similar to sliding into your DMs like a snake, I slid into lots of band DMs like a snake and said, I want your song. Can I have your song? And they were like, you kind of have to talk to record labels and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, okay. But they gave me the blessing. And then I had an awesome guy at Universal Music called Phil Canning, who's become a good mate, who did all the sort of business side of stuff. So I got the kind of okay. And then we got them to let us have their songs for way less than, you know, they deserve. They're massive tunes, but similar to yourself, you like the script and like the project. And I'm forever grateful to all of you for coming on board for our little budget.
Can you make a film, a soundtrack album anymore? There's no point, is there, I guess?
We were talking about it, yeah. I'm still talking about it, but it's kind of, I feel like we've kind of missed the boat. In the end, I just thought, in my true indie girl fashion, I just made a Spotify playlist and it had like, I've made a Giddy Stratospheres film playlist that you can listen to. And it's already had fucking loads of listens. And I kind of, that's enough for me. I haven't got enough time to work out how to release a bloody record. If anyone's interested, then get in touch. But yeah.
Yes, well, that's definitely true. I mean, they do make records now, don't they? But it seems to be all music's just there now, isn't it? So
it is, yeah.
I mean, all the music I listen to is children's stuff that my kids like. I listen to a lot of Katy Perry now.
Yeah, so, cool.
You know, if you're ever doing a film about Katy Perry, I know a lot about Katy Perry. It's all filth, all of Katy Perry's. I don't really like my 6-year-old daughter listening to Katy Perry.
Well, all her lyrics are filth.
They're all about spunking, being spunked on.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought they were all like her roaring and like acting like a sort of wild animal.
They're roaring and then being spunked on.
Roaring and spunking.
There's so many illusions. The fireworks all about just show me your colours
like
burst. I don't know. I think it is. I had to listen to it with my in-laws in the back of the car and I felt very embarrassed.
Oh dear.
My 6-year-old daughter, she was 5 then, she was listening to a story about someone's cock being like a firework, making people go oh oh oh, which isn't
pure
what a firework
jizz.
Wasn't what a firework does. I think I've done this as material on the podcast before.
Oh, anyway,
I'll stop now. I've been watching Scooby Doo. You should do a Scooby Doo. I was watching Scooby Doo with my son because he had a I'll just talk about myself for a bit, Laura. One of his presents for Christmas was a Scooby-Doo Haunted Mansion. He's never seen Scooby-Doo, but he really wanted this Scooby-Doo Haunted Mansion. So I thought he should watch Scooby-Doo, but I tried to buy it. I tried to stream it, and it was like £42 a series for Scooby-Doo. But
what?
I managed to find a DVD for £5, but like I can't. It was like you had to buy every episode. Every episode of Scooby-Doo is the same. You're going to have to pay £1.79 every single episode. Anyway, so we've been watching
Scooby-Doo. That's a lot of money, mate.
But yeah. We've been watching Scooby-Doo today. And it has blown my son's mind.
Yeah,
he loves. Yeah, he couldn't believe it when at the end of the first episode, Scooby was inside the Knight's. It looked like the ghost had come back, but it was Scooby at the end. It's the same. It's the same episode every time. He loved it. He loved it.
Oh, so, bless him.
So yeah. So, but I'm not really. I don't. You know, I was never massively into music, but certainly the music of the noughties had passed me by. As a middle-aged man,
did you enjoy any of the tunes?
I did enjoy it. if I'm forced to listen to stuff, I do enjoy it. I don't know why I don't listen to more stuff, but so it didn't have it didn't resonate with me in the same way a 90s thing would, because you know, I was a Radio 1 DJ in the 1990s.
Yeah, of course you were.
I know all the music.
Yeah, well, you'll love what we've got in store for this. So,
it sounds very, very exciting. I don't know who Baby Soul is, who you've won awards for directing Baby Soul's music
Miss
video.
Baby Soul. Yeah, she's an amazing soul singer. We made that. Gosh, it's like this 1 year just seems like it didn't exist last year at some point. Shot it in a day, and I it won a bunch of awards. I've got one there. So that's cool. Best director for
that's
that.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so yeah, right, and another amazing band called Industry Standard. I directed a video recently called Abstract Doom, which is quite Lynchian and weird, but I love doing music videos. It's really, really, really fun for me.
And so. Do you think is it still, I mean, you know, sort of historically female directors have sort of been overlooked. It's been very difficult for female directors to get work. Is that changing? Are you at the sort of vanguard of changing that, or is it still difficult for you to?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder. I have noticed, and I only noticed this recently, that the only artists that have approached me to direct their videos have been women.
Right.
And I don't want to, I don't know, it's quite uncomfortable to think why that might be. Maybe I'm scary. I don't know.
You're definitely scary.
So are you. but I don't know. Like, I haven't, I guess, I mean, I'm kind of new, aren't I? I don't want to pass too much judgment. But I do think that we're always struggling a little bit. But I guess we've just got to prove ourselves.
But, you know, you're making, you know, it's getting out of the making your own stuff. It feels a little bit to me like within comedy that there's been a sea change, and like within maybe the comedy shows that are getting on, there seem to be more shows that are fronted by women or that are directed by women. I think, well, maybe not directed though, but certainly, you know, an effort has been made, whether if you evened it all out and looked at it, whether it would be anywhere near 50-50, I would doubt, but it does seem like a lot of the bigger comedy shows more recently have been, I mean, Fleabag being the obvious one, but there have been plenty of other sort of female led things. We were watching Tina Fey produces it. It's called Girls Five Ever. Have you seen this?
I haven't, but somebody actually mentioned that to me this morning. Is it good?
I mean, we're enjoying it. Yeah, I think it is good. I thought it was actually a Tina Fey thing that she'd written, but it isn't. She's the executive producer, and she turns up in it as well. We've only watched about 3 or 4 episodes, but it's from a female point of view, it sort of points out how sexist all the music of the 90s and the noughties sort of was in terms of you know, being schoolgirls, and you know, it's very funny in terms of the way they sort of pastiche the lyrics of how women were treated in songs.
It's true.
It's a sitcom revolving around some middle-aged women, really, if being 40 is middle-aged, which I suppose it is. So it's, you know, again, it feels like a step in the right direction, but it feels like America's a bit ahead of us.
Yeah, I think
with that anyway.
I mean, I do have a lot of mates that are female that are directors and creators. So, you know, I think that hopefully we won't be far behind and things will even out because there's enough room for everyone.
Well, it's just hearing, you know, but it's also the importance of hearing a variety of voices as well. And I think that really sort of strikes me, you know, I was lucky in that I've got, because I'm a white man, that wasn't such an issue when I was starting out. So I managed to get work, but it was, you know, it was the same voices all the time in films and in TV. It was this a very sort of similar demographic of people talking about very similar things. And so just to get that variety of gender and class and ethnicity and everything, just it's interesting. It's more interesting to watch. I hope that will keep on.
Well, what's really good is that the kind of film festivals, I'll use BIFA as an example, the British Independent Film Awards, in order to put your film in for an award, you have to tick loads of boxes to include lots of different groups. So, you know, I think it's now, you know, I think it can't be ignored now, people that have been left behind. So I think things are changing.
Terrific. Well, that's great.
I'll
ask you a couple of emergency questions and then we'll let you get on with your day. But do check out Giddy Strats. It's short. That's the wonderful thing as well. As a parent, I have to tell you, when I'm sitting down to watch a film and it's 3 hours long, I go, I'm never going to get through this. But this is, how long is Giddy Strats?
An hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, 70 minutes. That's perfect.
That's what everyone said. I was worried people would diss us for it, but people are really into the
I just think there's no need for, most films don't need to be more than 90 minutes. And loads of films are just way too long. And I'm not even going to start to watch the James. I'm not very interested in James Bond. I was quite interested in this one just because of it might be a bit different. But I'm not going to watch that.
How long is it?
It's like 3 hours long or something. I'm not going to watch that.
Jesus.
I won't be able to stay awake. Right, let's find out about a bit you from the merch questions. Have you ever seen a ghost, Laura Jean Marsh?
I tried to convince my mum that I saw a ghost cat once, but I didn't actually see one. I just really wanted something interesting to say.
You've pretended to see a ghost and it was a ghost of a cat.
I pretended to see a ghost of a cat in the garden, and I remember her saying, "You're full of rot."
How would you know it was a ghost? Was it dressed in old-fashioned cat clothes, or was it? Could you see through it? I mean, I know you couldn't see it. I know you're making.
I came up with this ridiculous story that it like did some weird like backwards dance and did like weird stuff and tried to convince my mum that I was more interesting than I was when I was as a 5-year-old or 6-year-old or something. But you know, I don't think I've actually seen a ghost except for the ghost cat that didn't exist.
Okay. See, I thought you would have seen a ghost.
Really?
Because you know, you've taken some drugs in your time. I'm guessing.
Who made you think that?
I've just watched your film.
Oh right. No, I haven't seen a ghost.
No. Okay, I don't think I've ever asked anyone this question before. What musical instrument that you don't know how to play do you think you could pick up right now and have a pretty good crack at? See, you're musical anyway, you probably could. I reckon I could do the trombone. It's one of the hardest brass instruments there is, but it looks easy, doesn't it?
What's the one didgeridoo?
Didgeridoo.
Yeah, because you could basically just fart into it, couldn't you? You could do some. You could make all sorts of noises, and I think it's quite easy. I don't think I've ever had a go on one, but okay. I think I could do that for sure.
I think you could. I think that should be your next film. You saying arrogantly saying, "I reckon I could play a didgeridoo," and then failing to do so. Who is your favourite Steve?
Steve. Probably Coogan, right?
Steve Coogan? He's all right.
You invented Alan Partridge, my boyfriend.
I did invent Alan Partridge. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
He's good. Yeah, he's good. That's a good choice. Okay, I'll ask you a would you rather question.
Go on.
Would you rather die on your feet, live on your knees, or slide down a bank of snow on your bottom?
Definitely slide down.
Yeah, it's an obvious one. It's too easy.
Definitely. That sounds fun right now. Could do with snow.
Okay. Here's a question that I've, again, not asked anyone. Would you rather have Angelina Jolie's lips or Jennifer Aniston's hair? But the lips would not replace your lips, but be put in the middle of your back. The lips would be autonomous and be able to talk and need feeding and would be furious about being transplanted in your back. The hair would be all the hair that has ever grown out of Jennifer Aniston's head and body, and you wouldn't be able to trim or shave it off. You'd have a lifetime's worth of admittedly celebrity hair growing on whatever part of the body it initially grew on or nearest equivalent. So what I'm asking is, would you rather have Angelina Jolie's lips on your back, is it? The middle of your back.
Yeah, but
they're,
it needs
they're
feeding
alive and it's angry about being there. Or all of Jennifer Aniston's hair that she's ever had in her life.
But with Aniston's hair, what do you mean? With like multiple haircuts on my head?
No, just all the hair that's ever grown out of her head just and body would be just wherever it was on your head and body.
Like Cousin It kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it would be a lot of hair. You'd be very hairy.
I don't really like the idea of angry lip back.
No?
I think angry lip back would be a pain in the arse because you'd just be... You'd have to get some sort of. You'd have to put things in it to shut it up when you're doing podcast interviews and whatever.
It would be Angelina Jolie though, so you know that would be something. You'd have her forever being angry with you if she's furious with you.
I think she could be quite scary if she's angry. I don't want Angelina
in the back, mate. What she got? She's gonna put some lips in your back.
I was gonna say bum lips. I don't know why. I was gonna say Angelina.
They're not bum lips.
I don't want Angelina's lips on my back. Okay. It would be a pain in the bum. I think I'd definitely have Aniston's hair all over my body and okay. I'd kind of My Little Pony it up and you know, plait them and do all sorts of stuff with them.
You've made your choice. One put that asunder. Very good. Look, I don't think I can beat that. So we've got Giddy Stratospheres. Look out for that. The musical videos. Stutter coming up. Venom Falls as well. You haven't mentioned
Venom Falls. You're going to be.
Am I? My goodness. Yeah, definitely.
And you're feeding cats. No, feeding your fish with ground up cats.
I definitely, if I can grind up my own cats to do that, if I can bring in my own ground up cats, I would do that. That's for sure. Well, it's lovely that you would want to offer me parts in your projects. Thank you very much for that.
You're a star, wouldn't you?
Thank you. That's very nice. Thank you. And it's lovely to talk to you. And everyone should watch the film. And everyone should go out and make your own films.
Yeah, do it.
About your own experiences. It's absolutely fantastic. Please give a massive round of applause to the amazing Laura Jean Marsh, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back soon with some more. Goodbye. Thanks, Laura. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Laura Jean Marsh. Thank you to Scant Regard, who play the music in this particular podcast. I would also like to thank Chris Evans, not that one, for all his hard work in setting up these remote records, and much, much more besides that that you don't need. You couldn't even dream about what he's doing. He's an incredible man. I'd like to thank Ben Walker, who I'm indebted to, as always. And I would also like to thank you, the listeners, for listening. Please recommend this podcast to your friends. Just by listening to it, you're helping us to make more podcasts and more content. It's a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStripe.com production. I don't know if I need to tell you that. Go to GoFasterStripe.com, where you can buy my books, my downloaded shows, DVDs, if that's your bag, and also become a monthly badger and help us make even more stuff. What's not to like? Thanks for listening. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, richardherring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.